Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us, for open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
All right, I'm going to play the intro song. Here we go.
What's going on? You're listening to the Film Drunk Frotcast, coming at you not live from our frot quarters to yours. I'm Vince Mancini. I am joined, as always, you know him, you love him. He is the irregular regular, Mr. Matt Lieb.
They lum the butts. They lum the butts. I'm trying to do they not like us. It's really, it's tortured. But, you know, hey, what's up, everyone? Shout out
is
to Kendrick Lamar.
Rap? Okay, yep. Yep,
yes,
yep.
That is one of the rap battles.
I cannot keep track of the diss tracks, you know. I'm still
No one can. They released like, you know, 10 of them in like
no one's able to track it.
Of 3 days.
Yeah. I'm just now learning that Carly Simon's You're So Vain was about Warren Beatty, apparently.
It was about Dave Coulier.
Yeah, no, it's about Dave Coulier, I'm pretty sure.
It's about her sucking him off at the premiere of I don't know, Dick Tracy.
Twitch. I don't know if that works as a great diss. Like, remember when I sucked you off and you just left me? How dare you?
That is like, you know, that's a female disc track. Diss track is like when you just talk about how I sucked you off and you weren't nice.
That one's definitely like a female gaze of diss tracks.
I would like to clarify, a white female diss track from the 90s. This is very specific.
And yet one of the best ever written.
It's so good. People have spent decades wondering, like, is it about the Full House guy? And did he ever cut it out?
Just to introduce all the rest of the gang, third Mike, future NFL Hall of Famer, we got Brendan.
I got nothing. I haven't been able to keep up with the raps either, so
that's fine.
No one
expects anyone.
Want to lum your butt.
All right, there we go. There we go. Very good. Yeah. Very good.
And finally, joining us, a very special guest. I was on his podcast, Soundtracker, about soundtracks. What movie? I can't remember what movie we talked about. It was
Dude, Where's My Car?
Yeah, Dude, Where's My Car? That was a great journey back into. We got Eric Peacock, aka Uwe Bollocks on Twitter. Welcome.
Hey, you know what? You got the first name right. That is impressive. I know you know movies, but a lot of people even then are like Uwe or you. That's Uwe. You gotta lean into it.
I know my German.
Yeah, Vince has been beefing with that guy for a while, so you know. He knows him well.
Release the diss track.
Yeah.
That was like a Twitter 1.0 beef, wasn't it? Like you and Uwe Boll.
Well, I just remember when he beat up a bunch of nerds from Something Awful, and I was like, I don't know. I feel like I would box Uwe Boll. I'm okay with that. And
I don't know anything about this. You're telling me someone found Something Awful forum users and beat them up?
Yeah.
Damn.
There was another critic too. Who there was, it wasn't just Something Awful people. There was like, it's not Harry Knowles. For some reason that keeps popping into my head.
Well,
it's not
Harry Knowles,
so that would
right. Yeah, not him.
There was the time that Joe Swanberg beat up Devin Faraci at a Fantastic Fest event.
Yes.
That was the other major. Because the Fantastic Fest did like a critic boxing event that was sort of based on Uwe Boll's thing. They actually invited me to do it, but I was like, I don't really know who I have beef with in the movie world.
These days it would be Josh Gad.
Josh Gad. Also, like,
I would
love
to see you beat the shit out of Josh Gad. That would be so cool.
I don't feel like there'd be a ton of upside because it would just be like, you know, beating up a kid that
speeding up a theater kid, which is like low-key a hate crime.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it makes you seem that tough.
He looks like he would cry so hard that you'd actually feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. Be the worst like post-game interview, you know, post-fight. Yeah. He's just
how do you think
crying.
It went out there, Josh?
when it hit me in the face and then he did.
Sorry, go ahead, Brandon.
I was going to say, I was thinking about Dude, Where's My Car fairly recently because...
Because you lost your car?
Yeah, I lost my car and I had...
And you were like, oh, that's why they called it the name of that movie.
We went to an ostrich farm. We took a little family vacation right outside of Solvang, California. There's an ostrich farm. And
beautiful.
They give you like these pots. There's a handle on it. And like you hold it up and they are just like... Like it looks, I mean, it's intimidating. I was like, fuck, man.
Yeah, those are big, scary dinosaurs, man.
Yes, they are.
I don't know why, but I'm so confident against an ostrich. I just know I would win.
I don't know. The hubris, Matt. I remember seeing that movie in theaters and being like, I could fuck an ostrich up. That little skinny neck.
The skinny neck.
And oh my God, the amount of force they generate when they're eating. Like imagine they're really pissed off. It's scary.
Did you?
I would just pull its neck off.
Did you?
You would be the Josh Gad in this fight. No offense.
Ostrich said he wouldn't peck me in the face, and then he did. Oh yeah, I mean, I love that the naturally the ostrich is like a hustler in terms of fighting, like a fight hustler. Like it's got flashy feathers, you know. It looks like a fancy
living
lad
in
of birds.
America.
Yeah, and then like you know, so you think I could beat his ass, but then you don't know that underneath all them fancy feathers is like 100 pounds of muscle.
Yeah, it's doing like a Prince Nassim sort of like chucking and jiving.
Exactly, and it's like you know, I'm the only bird that can't fly, and I don't have hollow bones.
Yeah. Not true. The emu can also not fly.
Yeah, the penguins. I think. Yeah.
The emu also generates a lot of force because there's also emus at the ostrich farm.
If I was going to fight an ostrich, an emu, or a cassowary, I think I go emu.
You take the emu every time.
Yeah.
Well, what about a peacock? I gotta represent here.
Easy.
Yeah, have you ever been around one?
So for some reason, Pasadena just has loose peacocks around. If you've ever gone to Pasadena, California, it is like insane because there's just like street peacocks. Like,
they're just slutty. They're giving it out to any.
Oh yeah, I mean they're down on their luck, man. You know, I don't judge. I don't judge any sex workers or peck workers, whatever you want to call them. They just, you know. But I had a girlfriend who one time told me, and I don't think this is true, but I never looked it up, so I think it might be true. That every peacock has a thing called a blood feather. It's one feather that if you pull it, it's like connected to an artery and they bleed out and they die.
Don't know about that. That sounds fishy to me. It might be true.
Listen, I'm not going to look it up. So I will say that if I got in a fight with a peacock, I just pull out his blood feather.
Yeah. You got to know where the blood feather. So, Brendan, you were not tempted to play like the popcorn bucket trick on any of the ostriches?
What's that trick?
Where you put your pee-pee through the bottom of the popcorn bucket.
I really showed that ostrich.
It bit my dick off.
Gobble, 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 gobble. I mean, they got that long neck. I don't know.
That's got to have happened.
Yeah.
Like, I want to go to the, like, so. Solvang emergency room.
A lot of weird stuff has happened, but I don't think that's happened.
No, I bet if you went to, like, the whatever.
Just telling the ostrich, bite my dick off, queen.
No, like, the Buellton emergency room. And you'd be like, tell me about all of your ostrich related injuries. One of them would be like one guy who stuck his dick through the little bucket. And
what happened was,
I'm generally of the mind that like things have happened that are far dumber than you could ever comprehend.
Yes.
Right. I'm totally on that team. At the same time, Matt, I just, man,
you just don't think
you see those ostriches and you just know they mean fucking business.
Yeah, I know, but the kind of person
your pee-pee shrinks back inside in defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The kind of person though who's going to do it, like the kind of person who shows up to the ostrich farm with the hole already cut out of the popcorn box, like that guy's not turning back. Like he's not going, oh shit. Never mind.
He brought like, his Dune promotional bucket and everything.
Yeah. His friends are already there. Just, you know, he's not going to look like a fool in front of the fucking sandworm.
Yeah.
It's like a Steve-O thing. Steve, I think yes. That might be the only person I could, would have been like back in the dark days, Steve-O.
Yeah. Steve-O when he was using.
He definitely would have let an ostrich try to bite his dick off.
I mean, I don't know, man.
By the way, my wife just texted me.
My wife!
Thank you.
Sorry.
Asking if I was okay, and I had to, what's going on up there? Oh. I was imitating Josh Gad getting beaten up by Vince. It's better if you don't ask why.
There's really not like a good route there. The other thing is they're talking about getting your dick bit off by an ostrich. Like there's really a good answer for that question.
The answer should have been, I'm sorry, I stubbed my toe just so it's, she thinks you're normal.
Yeah, there's some things that I just don't share with her.
Yeah,
no, and that's the part of you that's what makes it sexier because you have a part of you that you keep.
Every married man's home there is a locked file cabinet that has a pocket pussy and an Oculus Rift
and a big mouth Billy Bass
and you know the wife is just like I know not to go in there because I'm going to see something I don't want to see.
or if you're Joe, some couch cushions.
Yeah. Just two huge couch cushions covered in cum.
Eric, you're in Ohio, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of? Do you have any ostrich farms? Like where?
I wonder what the segue was here. Yeah. No. There
do you have a lot of large flightless birds anywhere?
What's the weirdest animal you've ever tricked into sucking your dick? Where's our Peabody?
Nothing has sucked. No animals have sucked my dick. Sick. But I've got a good Ohio thing. When we were talking about peacocks, there is a junkyard. I'm in a really small town in Ohio. And like, there's this place that it's actually called Little Mexico. That's the name. That's the name of this little, like, I don't know what you'd even call it, like township. Mm-hmm. And there's a junkyard there. And they have, instead of guard dogs, they have peacocks that run around.
Junkyard peacocks.
Junkyard like peacocks. It. I swear to God.
Oh, fuck. Well,
this was like 20 years ago. It was when I was in high school. I had to go there. They're probably dead now. I don't know. But like, I remember going and seeing peacocks running around. That's why I doubt you finding one, because if they have those to replace dogs at a junkyard, there's got to be something to it. I know,
that
is kind of,
that does make me think twice.
So yes, if they hunt in packs like velociraptors, you're fucking sunk.
They are always together. That is the weird thing about peacocks. They do hang out together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're squatted the fuck up, man. You can't just like, okay, so let's assume, Matt, 1v1.
Okay.
Okay, I'll give you that. But then, yeah, what happens with the other six that are right there?
You know what the worst thing
is?
Is
jumped.
You think you can get past me to this junkyard? Hey, what about my cousin right here? There's five of them.
Cholo peacock is great.
There's always an extra. There's always an extra one there to protect the blood feather. There's the one guy whose job is to not let Matt get to that blood feather.
Well, Eric, you're also in the land of unlicensed.
Hey, distract
zoos.
Him! He's going for the blood feather. Fuck!
Eric, you're also in the land of unlicensed zoos.
Yeah. Oh God. I live like 45 minutes away from, and it's just like, it's a Debbie Downer story at the end. But some guy had a bunch of like live like tigers and shit get away, and they had to like put them down. Like,
Okay, I know why it ends in a bummer. Did someone got eat by a lion?
No, they had to kill all the animals.
They had to kill all the animals.
Oh, I don't give. Okay. Well, I mean, no, that sucks. That sucks. But I thought this ended with, like, you know, something with a soul getting hurt. I'm just kidding.
No.
I remember that story because it was like a pretty good story. But then two magazines, I don't remember who it was. It was like GQ. Mm. And then I think it might have been like the New Yorker, like both did big long reads on it. And they came out like at the same time. And the thing I remember is that like people stopped talking about the story, which was really good. And everyone was like, I can't believe there's two of them. Like, what are these guys doing? And it turned into this like media beef.
Yeah.
Like thing. And I'm like, why does everyone care? Like, what?
Wait, people were mad because there was two features about this in separate
magazines?
Yeah.
And then some people were saying like, some people were saying like, oh, there should just be one. And then like, there should have been some sort of like professional courtesy. Like I could not understand it. Like
that is insane.
Anytime. And I, you know, obviously Vince, I don't work in media like you, but it definitely seemed like one of these things where it's like, you know, media just has such an outsized presence on Twitter that a lot of times people forget that if you're not in media, you're sort of like, you know, Adam Schefter's tweeting out ratings. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't care. Like,
No, people getting mad at that is very funny, though.
It is weird. And as I'm saying, it's weird. I have like in my drawer here a list written in lipstick of people who have done podcasts about Dude, Where's My Car that I'm planning on finding and murdering someday.
That's fair.
That's so fucking weird, man.
Yeah. Oh, that's strange. I'm not going to kill those guys.
not to belabor Dude, Where's My Car, but I really feel like Andy Dick turns in the strongest performance in that.
He does.
Oh, 100%.
Dude, Andy Dick brought it most of the time.
Yeah.
Did you ever see his sketch show on MTV?
Yes.
It was amazing.
Yes.
So Boogeyman as this DJ is like one of the funniest fucking, he's a piece of shit, but my God, the one where the Boogeyman retires to become a house DJ from scaring people is like one of the funniest like short sketches ever.
He did a whole sketch about being Tom York.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say Tom Green because he did a whole Tom Green parody.
Oh, did he?
And I love Tom Green, DeBrat, but that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, he's like, I'm on my scooter. I'm on my scooter.
He just like goes to a lady getting groceries and takes her eggs and throws them on the ground and goes, I'm Tom Green.
I mean,
I think
classic.
Didn't DeBrat make an appearance in that sketch?
I think so.
Probably.
I think she shows up and punches him.
Sounds right.
I feel like the way I gauge that Andy Dick had the standout performance is by the fact that it is the only part of that movie that my dad quotes is the Andy Dick parts. And my dad only quotes the hottest parts of the strangest movies. So,
you know. What does he say? Email me at guyinacage.com.
No, yeah. That is, I forget what he says, because it's like one of those, it's low on his list. I mean, the top ones are always like, did you ever flashy thing me? something about, he misquotes Fargo a lot. He's like, you put him in the chippa? And it's like, no one says that.
Yeah, they don't have that accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do they sound like they're from Boston, Dad? It takes place in Minnesota.
You can't expect my dad to do a good accent. The only accents he can do are like basically Jewy, and he can do this really, really racist Jesse Jackson accent. I can't get into it. He has stopped doing that. But only after years of me yelling at him, please stop doing that accent.
It's like you have Kirstie Alley's parents or something.
No. They would, if they got into that car accident, they would have lived.
All right. Well, I gathered everyone here today, railroaded them into discussing Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted movie, which we are going to talk about. But I did have a story first that I wanted to discuss.
Love a story.
Yeah, this dropped like I think maybe a day or a few hours after we recorded last week, so we didn't get to talk about it, but like there was famously the Vin Diesel The Rock beef on the set of The Fast and the Furious, and I am a big follower of Vin Diesel's social media presence, and he is fascinating. He seems like one of the most sold on himself dudes out there. Like he just has that confidence born of believing that he's the greatest person in the world. So I always sort of
I always sort of blamed Vin Diesel for the Vin Diesel, the Rock beef on the sure. set of the Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, he does seem like the insane one, whereas, like, yes. you know, the Rock is just so likable and personable that you're just like, I'm sure he was just being a normal guy.
That's what I thought. But then yep. this huge article dropped in the Wrap about how Dwayne Johnson is causing his movie to go like many millions over budget and is constantly late and a number of other things. And I just wanted to read some quotes from it because it was pretty entertaining. This kind of like it took me back to the days when I still actually like enjoyed Hollywood news because right. this is the kind of stuff I like, which is just the petty bitching and workplace gripes. That's hell like yeah. my, you know, when you have 200 people working on a set, there's always someone who, you know, there's a lot of gossip, and that's kind of the sure. fun part. Insiders told The Wrap that Johnson showed up as much as 8 hours late to set on the movie, forcing the crew to shoot around him on some days. On previous films, Johnson has made a habit of peeing in a water bottle to save time, upsetting crew members. That one's, I don't feel like that's that bad, but you know, yeah. I grew up in the country and I pee outside a lot. On set, away from his trailer, if he needs to pee, he doesn't go to the public bathroom, one insider who knows the movie star well said.
He makes me drink it. I have to suck it out of his, I'm sorry.
By the way, like this is, he. There's probably like 50 different people quoted in this, all anonymously. It's like the beautiful. Most perfect Hollywood story. He pees in a Voss water bottle and his team or a PA has to dispose of it.
Wait, does it have to be Voss?
Apparently. I mean, you know how they are. They're all fucking very particular about the... When you have like 10 people in charge of making you the exact type of food or drink that you like,
right.
You're going to have particular about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The brand is important, probably more to the people around him than even to him.
I remember when I was still a PA, I remember driving around for half a day trying to find the director of photography for a fucking Indian casino commercial. I had to find him like diet caffeine free Dr. Pepper because that was like the specific thing that he asked for, and I had to go to like three different fucking Walmarts out in the East County of San Diego trying to find it.
Ugh, ugh.
Yeah, so you can imagine if you're The Rock, like with the kind of, you know,
yeah, what kind of weird shit you have to go into with fucking Sprouts to get.
Yeah. So this was all based around the movie called Red One, which is apparently an idea that had been come up with. I don't know if that's a phrase.
That had been come up with. Been doing the Cholo voice too much.
This is an idea that had been come up with by...
You just barely came up with this just now.
Barely. His... Dwayne Johnson's, this guy who is his brother-in-law, who is now like a film producer, apparently he came up with this idea and he is now, he runs like The Rock's production company now. It used to be his brother-in-law. We'll get into that. But I had to read this synopsis like 12 times to try and understand like what the hell it was about. And this is the movie that is currently like apparently ballooning past $250 million. Just keep that in mind. Amazon, which
you're
is like
budget.
Yes, budget. Okay. Like, this is like fucking Justice League type numbers.
Nice.
Amazon was hoping to launch a potential franchise with Red One, which is about, deep breath, a villain who kidnaps Santa Claus from the North Pole, after which an elf, ELF, extremely large and formidable, operative, joins forces with a bounty hunter to find Santa and save Christmas.
Oh, my God. This is a franchise, huh? Yeah. You're gonna make more than one of them? How many times are you gonna save Santa? Now we gotta save Rudolph.
Yeah, that's true.
Now we gotta save Mrs. Santa. What is this, like Taken? Someone's
Easter
just like
Bunny.
Santa keeps getting taken. It's like Charles Bronson movie, but about Santa.
Said one Red One insider, the only thing
said
Dwayne,
one Red One. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The only thing Dwayne was consistent at was being chronically late. The examples of Johnson's tardiness are numerous and well documented, from showing up late to fan events to leaving entire sets idle while he was off doing 3-hour workouts.
Okay, see, that's insane. I understand being late because you're just like tired or you forget or you sleep in or whatever, but him just being like, I got to work out for 3 hours. I'll see you guys.
Like, yeah.
Who the fuck works out for 3 hours?
For 3 hours, right. That's yeah. fucking too much.
Especially when you're like a 48-year-old man or something. Like, you need
he's
going to
injure himself, and he's going to look bad.
He's totally natural, though.
Yeah, totally.
You literally, if you're 48, you cannot work out for 3 hours unless you're juiced to the fucking gills.
I'm 43 and my shoulders are glass. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I mean, the other thing that's funny about this is like the amount of time that he says he's late. Like, there's a few different specific instances here where they say he was 8 hours late, which is like, that is not late. That's like showing up on the wrong day.
That's no show. That's no show. Late is, yes, the concept of late is, you know, has to be in linear time. You know what I mean? It can't be removed from time.
Yeah. Earlier this month, he was three hours late ahead of his main match at WrestleMania 40. For WWE World, a WWE fan event in Philadelphia leading up to WrestleMania 40, Johnson showed up 2 hours behind schedule, drawing boos from the crowd and criticism from the Philadelphia press.
Oh, I'm sorry. He showed up late to a WWE event in which there was a crowd of 20,000 people waiting? Is that what you're telling me?
That's what it says. Yeah.
That's some fucking Lauryn Hill shit.
Yeah, I was gonna say none of these people in that crowd have been to a rap concert, because I've been to a bunch and they're all I saw Ghostface once and he was about 2 hours late getting on stage.
So. Yeah, but at least
that's also like you sort of bake that into that when you're concerts are always late. Unless it's Ozzy Osbourne, it's gonna be at least an hour or two late, right?
Yeah, but I mean, just the idea of like, because you're filming this thing. Like, he's fucking with kayfabe. That's how late he is.
Right. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. They're supposed to be mad at him for other stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, bro, what the fuck? TikTok, man.
TikTok. Yeah. Checking his call sheet.
I just remembered I saw Guns N' Roses in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being like, oh yeah, oh, Axel's late. Yeah, he's late. They're not out here yet. Like, I was like excited. Like, it was part of the show.
He's totally doing the thing.
Yeah.
He's doing the thing he sang about, Mr. Brownstone.
Oh, that's great.
You're booing because The Rock was a little late. That's why you're booing? Johnson asked the crowd. The Rock was watching YouTube, watching Jalen Hurts lose in the playoffs again. That was pretty good. I mean, you
know. Oh yeah, this is Philly. Yes, that's good.
Playing to his heel persona, Johnson added, "You boo because it's the truth. Now The Rock has shown up. You got greatness in front of you. You stand there, shut your mouth, and enjoy the ride that The Rock is taking you on."
I mean, he's not wrong.
Right, exactly. I mean,
I don't think it's bad to make wrestling fans wait. I think it's bad to make like a movie set of like hundreds of people.
Yes, of professional adults wait.
Yeah.
Especially one who had to clean your piss bottle up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
On the set of Red One, Johnson's pattern of lateness proved more damaging. Johnson was late an average of 7 to 8 hours per day.
At some point, you make the call time. You tell everyone else a different call time. Actually, it's going to be at, it's at 5 o'clock and not at fucking, you know, nine. Hold on. Yeah, I did the math right.
Come on, you got it.
I did it. You say 9 a.m., but it's really 5. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So they get into that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Sick.
So you do the trick that you do when you're traveling with Vince?
Exactly. Wow. Exactly.
Wow.
Yes. Or my wife.
Apparently, he ballooned costs by at least $50 million, according to 3 insiders. It was a fucking disaster, one insider said. On days when Johnson didn't show up at all, the production crew was forced to shoot around him. Johnson's tardiness has been an issue for a number of years. Quote, they rent a location they can shoot as much as they can of other actors while they wait for him to decide if he's coming to the set, a producer who visited the set of HBO's Ballers told The Wrap.
I'm sorry, that sentence didn't make sense.
They get the location and they try to shoot everybody else. Like, they try to shoot everything else they can, like, just while they're waiting for him to show up or not.
But is it me, or was that like a really poorly?
Yeah, it was a direct quote, and they did not paraphrase.
Yes, it was a direct quote. Sorry, yes.
A former production assistant on the show corroborated this, saying he was regularly 3 to 4 hours late to set, keeping 100+ crew members waiting for no reason. In March of 2017, Johnson was 6 hours late to the Ballers set. On the set of 2018's Rampage, Johnson was late an average of 4 to 5 hours, with one co-star keeping records of his tardiness. Dwayne's call times are never, ever published on the call sheet, one of the insiders added. It's because of the actors on Rampage. It's because one of the actors on Rampage was keeping a log of how late DJ was to set every day. And then God,
I forgot they made a Rampage movie.
I totally did too. And I saw San Andreas, which I will defend as like a solid bad movie.
Is Rampage that video game where you fight a raptor?
Yeah.
No, it's the one where you are a monster who's like busting up all the buildings.
Oh, you are a monster.
Yeah.
You're not a guy who fights a raptor.
No. You're like it's a game from like the 80s.
Like an arcade game.
It's an arcade game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So finally, we got this last section, which was actually my favorite section about Dwayne Johnson's shithead brother-in-law that he apparently hired.
Nice.
Which is my favorite. It's my favorite genre of showbiz story is just someone hiring some random fuckhead and them like quickly ascending the ranks and becoming like a super producer.
Yeah.
Because like it's how that's how most of those people got their jobs is they were someone's like assistant. Like that's
right.
Hiram Garcia, the brother of Johnson's ex-wife and business partner, Danny Garcia, started out as Johnson's personal assistant on the set of 2002's The Scorpion King. After that production wrapped, Garcia returned to his hometown of Miami to become an assistant on commercial shoots. Years later, Garcia returned to become Johnson's full-time assistant, where he was responsible for prepping Johnson's meals and making sure he had water on set. According to a Universal insider, Garcia got upped to creative assistant on the set of Fast Five, where he had only one job, to work for Johnson. Garcia was promoted to the president of production at $7 in 2017. That's Johnson's production company.
I assumed.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't think it was anything else.
Yeah.
Just in case.
According to numerous insiders who have dealt with him firsthand, he is incapable of leading physical production. Quote, Hiram went from making Dwayne's protein shakes to running his company, the Universal insider said of his meteoric rise. If Vince from Entourage tried to give Turtle a real job, Hiram Garcia is what you get as a result, according to a top agency.
Hell yes. Hell yes.
That's like a meta burn on so many levels.
Yes.
Yeah. Especially since The Rock basically starred in Sports Entourage. Which was
right, exactly, with ballers.
Yeah. Despite working side by side and frequently shadowing seasoned producers for years on large scale studio production, Hiram still has no idea how to produce, the agency insider added. The only thing he has ever known is how to work for Dwayne. Anytime he's been in a situation where his responsibilities have expanded, he has crumbled.
I love this. I love the idea of like they have like an all hands meeting and he's just like, all right, as a president of this company, our priority is make sure Dwayne get water. Okay, so step one, he got water. Step two, he pee in the water bottle. We gotta
he
make
doesn't
sure
drink
we throw it out.
All the water. Someone gotta finish last third so he can go pee.
Yeah, someone needs to drink a little more of the water. This is the type of water you get him. All right, step two, find someone for in charge of money.
Protein shake.
I can't do money, so step two, find someone for in charge of it. Step three, rub his shoulders, tell him he's my best friend.
Matters all came to a head in 2022 when Johnson and Danny Garcia met with Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav on not only inserting Superman back into Black Adam, but according to four insiders, positioning $7 to run DC and replace then chief Walter Hamada.
Good. I would love if they did that.
Yes,
yeah, I'm for that.
Too. Yes.
Just wing it.
I mean,
it can't be any worse.
The Rock's water guy was like, you know what? I should run DC.
Yeah.
I love that.
What I was thinking was making more Superman movie and then more Batman movie.
You need to put Superman back in The Rock's movie. And every time he's on screen, he has to talk about how great The Rock is and how he wishes he was The Rock.
And in terms, getting new IP, The Rock makes new IP every day, and he puts his IP inside of this Voss water bottle.
You did it.
I did it.
You did it.
I got it, dude. It was so hard, but I got there.
Garcia wasn't hired to run the unit, and Johnson and Seven Bucks were evicted from DC shortly after the hiring of James Gunn and Peter Safran to run
evicted.
The division.
Evicted? Yeah.
Yeah. Additionally, former Superman actor Henry Cavill fired Danny Garcia as his manager as a result.
He was his manager at some point?
No, that is The Rock's ex-wife and the brother of this guy who was apparently...
Okay. Yeah. A big deal.
Yeah. Hiram Garcia initially conceived the story for Red One, which was ultimately scripted by blah, blah, blah. So he came up with the whole Santa Claus, you know... bounty hunter.
He came up with that idea?
Yeah, well, pretty wild, right?
Oh, he's an ideas guy.
He's an ideas guy.
He proved that with Fuck Mountain.
Yeah, exactly.
With DC in the rearview, Garcia's singular focus became Red One. Amazon MGM was caught off guard when it was clear that Garcia was to be the film's lead producer, according to insiders. According to Garcia's critics, he was hired because he wouldn't, quote, ruffle any feathers with Johnson.
So, he wouldn't want his feathers to be ruffled.
Yeah, it could be a blood feather.
It could be a blood feather, and then boom, he's dead. No more The Rock.
Long story short, The Rock's piss bottle guy is in charge of a $250 million movie.
I mean, isn't that so like Hollywood that, you know, you just have to spend years and years drinking the piss of your betters, and then eventually you'll get to run a movie studio. Yeah, well, that's cool. Yeah,
you got to put in your time.
Cool. You got to put in your time. Some people, they go from the mailroom, you know, all the way to the CEO. Some people, they go from the pee-pee room all the way to the seven bucks.
To the PPO.
To the Voss bottle.
There we go. What is the name of the studio, of the production
seven
company?
Bucks?
$7, yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. They never say.
Just probably about how much
stupid.
It's worth.
Yeah, give a damn what money to get money.
By the way, Josh Gad,
yeah,
he is making his directorial debut on a biopic of Chris Farley.
Fucking kill me, dude. Fucking kill me. First of all, a biopic of Chris Farley. Can we?
Yeah, don't do that.
Can we not do that?
There is one good outcome here. If they do that, Jared Leto does that thing that he did with the Mark David Chapman movie and gains like 300 pounds to play Chris Farley, and then everyone hates the movie. That's one positive that could come from this. Jared Leto's Chris Farley.
But I need to back up real quick. Mm. There's a Mark David Chapman movie?
Yeah. Jared Leto almost killed himself trying to
fatten up. Yeah, he drank like pints of ice cream and shit.
Yeah.
Wait, when did this movie come out?
And everyone hated it. Like 2000, I was in college, so like 2004. Yeah. It was
I want to see this movie.
It's called Chapter 48 or some shit. Why don't I remember that?
That is awesome. I need to see this movie. Is it just follow his story as he decides to kill John Lennon?
Uh huh.
Yeah, there have been like several like great moments in method acting where some actor nearly killed themselves over a movie that no one saw.
That
and
sucked.
One was Jared Leto as Mark David Chapman. I think another Lindsay Lohan, I feel like, did this at one point.
Oh, for Mean Girls. she went method as a South African or something. No, I don't know.
And 50 Cent for that movie where he like played a football player with like cancer or something.
Oh Christ, I forgot about that. I forgot about that one.
I didn't even know this. He lost too much weight.
Yeah, he like you've never seen that picture of 50 Cent looking like freakishly thin because
no, but I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah.
50 Cent thin.
Well, he just lost a bunch of weight, so you're just gonna get new pictures. Like,
Think you're supposed to, I don't think you're supposed to method act when you have like 9 bullets in you or whatever.
Like, yeah. Okay. This is from May 28th, 2010, from HuffPo. 50 Cent's weight loss details how he did it and how far he went. And now it's just, this is a picture of him very skinny. He doesn't look good skinny.
No.
I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, no. People that are big shouldn't get skinny. It looks weird.
He says he doesn't anticipate winning awards for his acting role. Well, you know, I haven't received accolades that come with the success that I've had in music. It would be a surprise to win any awards. Yeah.
It would be, you know, it'd be an achievement just to be nominated.
Yes, yes.
All right. Oh, well, you know what? I feel like we're we got to talk about. We're all here. We got to get we got to get frosted. Jerry Seinfeld, he did one of
we
got to
get
arguably,
unfrosted.
We got to get unfrosted. He did arguably the most successful sitcom of all time, and then didn't really make any movies afterwards for 30 years ish until now. And he has finally made his, I don't know, long awaited directorial debut.
Finding out why.
Yes.
He made it on a movie called Unfrosted, which is about the invention of the Pop-Tart.
Yep.
Eric, as our guest, would you like to tell us what you thought of Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted movie?
So I have, okay. I mean, it's bad. It's bad. There's no getting around the fact that it's bad. I had checked Letterboxd before, before you even asked me to come on. You know, it popped up in like Chris Cabot and Eric Ziska from We Hate Movies, and like the, right. I mean, like half star, scathing. Like Cabin pointed out a part that we'll get to, I don't want to spoil anything, mm-hmm. As being like something that made it like just sort of bad to like sinister. And I wasn't as down on it as them. I think I gave it like a 2 or something. Like it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie. It's a bad movie. That's a bad review from me. It's weird because it kind of feels like it was going for not, it's not like a parody. I guess it kind of is because it's like the Pop-Tarts is a space race thing, but like it almost feels like he was going for like Zucker, Abram Zucker, and instead landed on Friedberg Seltzer on accident. Like it's it's a bunch of like boomer nostalgia. Like, do you remember this? And do you remember this? And I just want to know if his like cancel culture shit that he's been saying recently is because of the like reception this movie got, because if so, that's even more funny because like this is such a tepid and harmless piece of shit. I mean, I laughed maybe 5 times. Like, I'm not talking big laughs. Like, I got a couple chuckles.
It was chuckle worthy.
It's not bad, but when you're doing like a laugh a minute movie and your batting average is like, or your average is like 5%, not good. You know what I mean? Like,
below the Mendoza line.
Yeah. My thing with this movie was like, I saw the bad reviews sort of. Like, I didn't read all of them in depth, but I saw like the general consensus was that this movie sucked. And I turned it on out of curiosity. I watched some of it and I was like, this is kind of fine. I don't know what everybody was talking about saying this movie was so bad. And then I looked at the status bar of the movie and I realized that there was 53 minutes of movie left somehow.
Yes.
And I was like, what the fuck? How is this movie?
This movie that long? To me is like a anomaly in physics. It has the ability to slow down time in a way that I've never experienced before in something that is supposed to give me entertainment.
Yeah.
I'm not being like facetious or I'm not talking this up. I'm not exaggerating. This is the worst movie I've ever seen in my fucking life.
No, it is not.
100%. 100%. 100%. I've never dreaded a movie from moment to moment.
Oh, I have so many times.
Honestly, I feel like maybe a student film, maybe like I don't know.
I need to take you to a festival sometime, my friend.
I guess I only watch bangers or something because like this movie, and I watched it with a bunch of people at someone was house sitting for Karen Kilgariff, and Karen has a very large like 4K TV, so I watched this in like the highest possible definition, like higher than the human eye.
That's not going to help a movie like this.
No, it didn't help at all. In fact, we spent the first 10 minutes fucking with the settings to see, like, how do we get this to look like I'm watching on my phone? And instead, it was the picture was, like, it just looked insane. Like, I couldn't enjoy myself and be in movie mode because everything looked weird.
There is
a lot of people got, like, mega smoothed.
I was going to say, in the first scene, like it has a framing device where Jerry Seinfeld comes out sort of Forrest Gump like to explain the story of the Pop-Tart.
Yeah,
to a little Asian boy. And
yep.
And the first thing that I like, my first note was on this movie was like, how much fucking makeup did he put on himself for that? Like he looked bronzed within like an inch of his life, and it was yes. like, man, that only makes you look weirder and older when you do that.
Well, I do want to point out one of my notes, and I was going to mention this, is it's funny that you both talked about this, because about partway down in, I have, this is where I realized there was an hour left in the movie and was dreading. Like, it was, yeah. It is weird, because I was like, well, this isn't, and there was a moment where I was like, how long do I have left in this? And I was like, get the fuck out of here. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I mean, maybe, I just can't think of a time in which I experienced that level of dread watching a movie where I was just like, oh my God, this is taking so long. Like, why is this taking so long? Why does it feel like this movie is slowed down time? And for me, that was like a good portion of why I can say, like, unequivocally, this is the worst movie I've ever
seen. I agree with you saying that it slowed down time. To me, it felt like, I don't know if you ever read one of those John Hodgman books from like the early 2010s, maybe, where it was just sort of like books of like absurdist fake facts. I thought they were pretty good, but this felt like that, except like the absurdist fake facts that he put in there were like derivative of recent jokes that I'd seen. Like there's a whole sequence with Hugh Grant as like the failed actor who's starring
as Tony the Tiger.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude, they did this entire sequence in Paddington 2 and it was good.
Right.
Like
he
was funny in it. Like why, like if you're like, you're making this absurdist movie full of comedy bits, yet they all seem like very derivative.
Well, and you brought up, okay, so Hugh Grant, not just Hugh Grant, like, I think part of what makes this one sting, and maybe why it's almost on a curve, because you have so many talented people. Like Andy Daly is the Quaker Oats guy on paper
was great.
Should be really fucking funny.
Yeah, and he has moments where I was just like, I'm laughing already. Good job.
I mean, there was three performances that I thought were legit enjoyable, which was Marsden as Jack LaLanne.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I enjoyed Bobby Moynihan and Chef Boyardee. Uh-huh. And I liked
Kyle Dunnigan.
I liked Bill Burr as JFK. Like Bill Burr as JFK was like weirdly kind of perfect.
Yeah.
Summertime and the living is thirsty. At least it is in the Lieb household. And when we are trying to get hydrated, we reach for the best water on earth. Fiji water.
Fiji water is bottled at the source and untouched by man until you unscrew the cap. Fiji water really is from the islands of Fiji, 1,600 miles from the nearest continent, and it is sourced from an ancient artesian aquifer and is naturally preserved from external elements.
That's right, Vince. You can literally taste the difference. So whenever we do an ad, we sometimes get samples sent to us of whatever we're advertising. And when I first got sent Fiji water bottles in the mail, I thought it was hilarious. I was like, I've tasted water before. Why would they do this? But believe me when I say this is absolutely the best water I've ever tasted. And that's because Fiji water is a natural artesian water with 100% natural electrolytes. Unlike some other top premium bottled water brands, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring.
That's right, Matt. Fiji water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands, giving it its signature smooth, soft taste. Fiji water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the U.S., and it has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH.
Also, Fiji water's 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles are made from using 100% recycled plastic. Fiji water continues to lead the top premium bottled water competition on launching 100% recycled plastic bottles. The aquifer Fiji water originates from is a sustainable source and will continue to replenish as the rain and water cycle persists in the islands of Fiji.
So get stocked up on Fiji water this summer and visit your local retailer to pick some up today for your next backyard party, beach or pool day, hike, or even your home office. It's not just water.
It's Fiji water.
Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here. If you know me,
you know there's only two things in this entire world I care about more than rewatching my favorite TV shows. It's gut health and former karate champion Chuck Norris. That's why I love Morning Kick. You're probably asking, what is Morning Kick? Well, I'll tell you. It's a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Look, I live in Los Angeles, all right? And this is a city defined by its culture of people drinking green drinks. Unlike the other green drinks out there, this one actually tastes good. It tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade. It's so good. And since I started drinking Morning Kick, my digestion is smoother and my body looks leaner. And I have energy all day. All day energy, which I need because I have a child and she's walking now, which means she's running now, which means I need energy. The thing I like most about Morning Kick is how easy it is to make. Just mix with water and stir. Simple. No blenders, no convection ovens, no turning your pantry into a science lab in order to make a SCOBY so you can brew your own probiotic drink. No. All you need to do is have some water and get yourself some Morning Kick, stir it in a glass, and baby, that digestion of yours, smooth. Smooth like silk. And you're gonna look good. And you're going to feel good. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/podyourself today. All right, let's get back to the show.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
I have a soft spot for the state, but I love Thomas Lennon.
I liked him too.
So this movie had moments where I think it's exactly as you described it, where it's like you get about five chuckles in it, and for a movie that is, you know, that ratio is awful for this movie because you are just waiting. And I'm sorry, but like this movie, I think would have been passable if it had just been a cartoon. Like, yeah. this is the most
10-minute cartoon.
Just make it, even if it's an hour 30, I'm okay with that because I feel like, at least as a cartoon, the artistry could kind of like, it would be doing a lot of the heavy lifting for how weak the script is. Mm-hmm. So, like, it, you know, I feel like there would have been, they could have packed it with more jokes. It would have been shitty. It would have been ants.
I think the defining feature of this movie is the fact that Sarah Cooper plays like a supporting role. Cause it's like, I feel like it's sort of the id of this movie where you take a thing that was like kind of funny on Twitter and TikTok. She was the comedian.
2019.
I forgot about her.
She was the comedian who was doing like lip syncs of Trump speeches. And like the first three times it was like, yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But then like every like MSNBC Democrat like shit their fucking pants about how funny it was, and like after like 8 months of doing Twitter lip sync, she had a book deal and a movie deal
and
was
Netflix
like,
special.
Was and it was like, SNL okay, man, it was no, not no. that fucking funny.
She might have
Goddamn.
Posted it. I mean, there was a few...
sort of like Jerry Seinfeld, just sort of cherry picking things that like an old MSNBC Democrat would love and being like, let's put that in the movie.
Well, so as the behind the scenes shit with this movie is that one of the reasons some of those jokes feel so dated is that this movie has been shelved for a few years.
Okay.
Apparently it was focus grouped in 2020 and didn't do very well, or like 2021 or something.
And they were like, I know, let's release it after we find out that Jerry Seinfeld's wife supports like Israeli thugs and Amy Schumer does like
Amy
a
Schumer,
few weird rape,
rape
cartoons.
It's funny watching it now because you can't help but like just look at the like every actor in it and just remember their weird social media feed from the last few months. Yeah. You'd be like,
I can't believe Brett Gelman didn't make it into this
movie. I know. I felt bad for him.
Eve Barlow pops up somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. But fucking this guy.
And Brett Gelman would have worked better than half of the actors in this movie.
Oh, 100%. Yes. But Alex Edelman was in it for a half second, who's a guy you guys don't know, but is a guy that I know and is someone who I've based like two like satire videos that I've done on him specifically. Okay. Yeah. He has no lines in it, but it was like I'm watching this movie and I'm seeing like on the one hand, I'm happy for the stand up comics who I know who are in it.
Right.
On
that level, it was like, okay, Jerry Seinfeld is like doling out favors to like some stand-ups that probably deserved it.
Right. And then on the other hand, I'm just like, you only know Cedric the Entertainer. That's the only black guy you know.
By the way,
props to Cedric. I mean, he committed, you know? The whole scene was kind of stupid, but he went for it.
Oh, there were funny chunks in this movie. I cannot deny it.
Chunks? Get the fuck out of here with chunks. No way.
You said Dunnigan, and I think Walter Cronkite bits are the funniest parts of the whole movie. The running gag about how much his wife, like, what's the line where he's like, do you have to drink so much? And he says, oh, if you keep talking so much or something like that. That's like the biggest laugh I got in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Michael. But in terms of like random people who are off-putting, I watched SNL for a long time, and I finally maybe stopped watching it maybe like 2 years ago. And since then, like Mikey Day keeps popping into my consciousness. And every time I'm like, I find him uniquely off-putting. Like he has like dead eyes and seems like the weird skater kid who would hit you with a skateboard. But he's like a dead-eyed skater theater kid. And I don't know, man. Does he bother you in the same
way? Who was he in this? I don't watch SNL.
He plays one of the Rice Krispies guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's him and Kyle Mooney and a third guy who I didn't know. And I felt bad for Kyle Mooney because I'm like, Kyle Mooney is legitimately funny.
I love Kyle Mooney. Yeah.
Yeah. And, Mikey Day, I don't feel any particular way about because I don't watch SNL enough to know what he does. But I didn't even watch the Beavis and Butthead thing.
He feels like he's gonna play a corny skateboard prank on me, and I don't really.
this is like my thing with Alia Shawkat, where I don't like her because she looks like she's gonna fuck my dad. Like,
that's very specific.
Well, she'll just be like, "I'm gonna fuck your dad," and I'll be like, "No, don't! My parents are still married." And then she's like, "I don't fucking care. I'm gonna destroy your family. I have no reason to think this." She never met my dad. But if for some reason I just had that image of her, so maybe this is like you know your thing with Mikey Day, where you just feel like he's gonna fuck your dad.
I can't. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, what? I don't know what person in my life that he reminds me of, but I have a reaction to him like every time. I'm like, ugh, I don't. He's weird and dead-eyed.
Looks kind of like you. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. You guys, maybe you just hate yourself, bro.
Yeah, could be. That could be it.
Fuck a rap battle. You're in a lifelong battle with yourself, Kendrick. So, just in terms of what this movie is about, this movie is about Jerry Seinfeld being like, what if I made a movie? this movie is about like, what can you do when you have $1 billion and you believe in yourself so much?
See,
I'm going to make a movie out of this.
Like I kind of appreciate the conceptual joke of it because you have all these movies lately about business geniuses and fake business geniuses, from Air, the BlackBerry movie, the Tetris movie, you got the Flamin' Hot movie. Like, there's a lot of movies about business geniuses of dubious veracity, and the idea of just making one that is complete bullshit, it doesn't seem like that terrible of an idea to me. But then when you combine it with like a 90-minute bit about Pop-Tarts, it feels like a Kenny Banya bit. Like,
yes, 100%. It is literally he's Banyan saying, you know, why don't they call it Roundteen? for 90 minutes. And I guess what pisses me off about it is that, like, as I'm watching it, I'm waiting for anything else yeah. to get me to grab me from this, and because there's nothing, it makes me angry, because he's just like, I don't know what he's been doing for the last 40 years, and the fact that, like, he doesn't have one thing built up and ready to fucking rock, and, like, not even if he didn't, like, get someone else to write something good.
Yeah, like, it was instead, sort of like,
it's just,
it was
like, I'm an auteur, I'm going to make the worst movie ever made.
It was like Barbie if the person who made Barbie had zero axes to grind.
Yes, 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 exactly.
Well, it do you think...
Yeah.
Do you think this would have been better? Like, I thought about this, because I didn't know the tone of this movie. Again, all I knew was posters. So I was expecting something like the Founder, the Michael Keaton McDonald's movie.
Yes.
Would this have been better with that sort of, like, treatment, do you think, instead of doing
Honestly, yes. It at least would have been watchable. Like, it would have been watchable.
I think it would have been better with, like one axe to grind, or one sort of take on any of the things or people involved.
One bit of perspective. Just like something where you, it's not even about opinion, it's angle. And, like, for me, like, the angle of this movie is, you're supposed to be charmed conceptually by the idea that the angle of this movie is like, oh, the guy who made a show about nothing is doing a Pop-Tart movie. You know, it's like the guy who, you know, is his whole brand is an adult who likes cereal. And it's like, and he, instead of that being like, calling Seinfeld a show about nothing is funny because it's obviously, that's a joke. It's not a show about nothing. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's, but calling it that is like, it's a conceptual joke. It's a joke. It's a joke in and of itself. But then instead he, like, internalized the about nothing thing.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't even play to his strengths.
He believed the marketing too much. Yeah, because I think, like, the thing about Seinfeld is it's like a show about petty grievances and the trivialities of life, which I think is actually, like, profound in a way, because, you know, life, you could argue that life is sort of a series of petty grievances and, like, trivialities, and taking joy, taking joy in them, like, is a celebration of life in some ways. But I think, like, with this movie, it's petty things with no grievances. It's like petty. It's like just someone describing trivialities, but he does not have a problem with any of them. They're not any, like, there's no complaint to them. There's no, like, take on them. It's just sort of like, Pop-Tarts, huh?
It's almost like impressive in its lack of imagination. You know what I mean? It is spitting out a version of this movie, like, first draft. It's like a one draft, like version of this movie. Plot-wise, I don't even care about plot. Honestly, all I care about is jokes when it comes to a movie like this. Mm-hmm. And once the movie gets started and you realize the jokes are going to suck, it becomes dreadful.
A chore.
A chore.
I like, there's jokes that should have landed. Like, I'm a big cereal guy. And like,
I love cereal. I eat it all the time.
Right. And that, so, like, when they did the in memoriam for, like, dead cereals, like, that shit like that should have landed with me. And it was like, this sucks. Like,
that was the most amazing thing in the world, because that one, I remember, like, at this point, it's only like 15 minutes into the movie, and at this point, it's already felt like 2 days. And I remember as soon as the in memoriam for cereal came up, I went, all right, great. How are they going to fuck this up? Because I was like, I like the concept. How will they not execute it? And they did the most amazing thing, which was they only had two examples. They didn't do rule of threes. They bailed on the joke. I was amazed by it, because I didn't actually think they would fuck it up. I thought the jokes would just be lame. Instead, they fucked it up. They didn't believe in it. And there's just so much of that in this movie, of like the closest thing they got to believing in a bit was the sea monkeys fucking
ravioli
thing. And even that they didn't believe in. They decided to fuck it, never mind on that. Like, make that
was so weird.
And it felt like it was going to be a conflict, and then all of a sudden it wasn't.
Yes, they bailed on that too.
Yeah.
Like, they took no risks. They earned no rewards. It didn't even work on a, like, isn't a bad movie great kind of level. Mm. Because it's like, it's not like The Room, where, like, The Room is amazing. It's like it's a bad movie, but it's like, it's almost just like a
scathing psychological profile. It's on
a psychological profile of this really vain guy. This movie, I was like, the only psychological profile I'm getting from Jerry Seinfeld is that he is a blank slate. Like,
yeah, not a care in the world. That's
yes,
what I got
that
from
his
it.
Brain is literally just the monkey with the fucking with the symbols.
Like, it did, you know, people always wonder, like, was Seinfeld good because of Jerry Seinfeld or because of Larry David?
And it is so clear.
This accidentally made the case that this is what Seinfeld would look like if Larry David's misanthropy wasn't a part of it.
100%. I mean, this to me completely, it's a case closed on that, because I mean, what made Seinfeld good is all the shit, the petty shit that he did care about, or at least claimed to care about, the character of Seinfeld cared about in the movie, or the character of George. And that's all coming from a place of petty grievance, and it's so clear that that's a Larry David trait and not a Jerry Seinfeld trait, and it just makes me even more resentful of Jerry Seinfeld, because I'm just like, you can't carry yourself as this fucking big deal. This is at this point you are not a comedy genius at all. I'm sorry, but if you hadn't gotten that development deal, well, fucking no, this is bullshit. I'm sorry. His whole career is a lie.
Well, he tried to go back to the Seinfeld well a few times. I don't remember off the top. The one I remember off the top of my head, it's in my notes. Yeah. But he does the Newman thing when they're talking about xanthan gum, and he's like, xanthan. You know what I mean? Like, it was like he's trying to capture that magic, or like wink at the audience. Like, remember the Newman thing, and it. I also think I'm trying to think how to say this. I think Jerry Seinfeld playing Jerry Seinfeld on Seinfeld, where the characters aren't supposed to be likable, works because
he's not a likable.
He's not a likable guy. Yes, and in this 100%. Movie, it doesn't work.
100%. And I think that is, like, you know, I don't want to be too hard on Seinfeld, because obviously, you know, he's got a really hard life. No, because I don't want to, like, overstate my case on hating Seinfeld, because one of the things I've always liked about him was that he was kind of, like, interpersonally a rude snob. Like, I've always found that kind of funny, that, like, no matter what, he will be a snob, and it's just, like, part of his personality. But, like, seeing this movie made me question whether or not I've ever liked him. It's kind of crazy, guys. This movie it was hard for me. I watched this movie with hate in my heart.
It's also, like, just really evident how much he doesn't know how to make a movie.
I mean,
like,
clear. It's so clear.
But it, just in terms of, like, there were so many lines he delivered that I could see actually hitting on Seinfeld, but, like, it's just not the right way to, like, deliver or place the line when it's a movie that doesn't have a laugh track.
Yes. Everything feels off.
I don't know. There was occasional things that I thought, like, I thought the JFK scenes with Bill Burr worked.
And I love Bill Burr, so I'm with you on that, because I love Bill Burr. I think Bill Burr is very funny, and seeing him as JFK got a laugh out of me just in concept alone.
Yeah,
and I also think it's elevated by the fact that, like, Bill Burr made a Netflix movie that felt like someone who doesn't like Bill Burr tried to imagine what people who like him like about him.
Yeah, right.
It was like he's like a shitty dad who hates woke people, and like, that's sort of like, you know, Bill Burr at 50 paces, but then, you know, once he does the jokes, he usually takes them somewhere different, and then
right, because he's a good comic.
Yeah, and then this movie, it felt like it gave us the good things about Bill Burr. I also mm-hmm. think it's like in his wheelhouse because he's playing like a, you know, a masshole. And he does the accent great. But yeah, but that was like one of the isolated good spots of this.
Tony Hale as the ventriloquist was very funny too, by the way. Yeah, I really like Tony Hale as the ventriloquist because Tony Hale's very funny.
Yeah, and the bit where the, he kills the puppet and he's still doing the voice, and I forget what the button on that scene was, but it was good.
The grout, he made fun of his grout, which again, that's funny. Like of all the things, he comes in and talks about how bad his grout looks, and they kill him for it. Like that I enjoyed that bit.
I feel like the one bit, if I had to say a bit that actually got a laugh from me on a level that was more than just a chuckle, was the funeral scene where they start pouring cereal on the coffin and you're just like, and then eventually you see the wife crying and pouring milk in. Because at that point,
I was so checked out by that point. I was like, at a certain point, I was like, have they invented the fucking Pop-Tart yet? Could they please just invent the fucking Pop-Tart?
Yeah, but like, I guess for me, like, because they dragged that fucking scene on and it was so bizarre that I was just like, maybe I can like this on a bizarre level. But at this point, I've just lost faith in humanity. And well, then so, she pours the milk in and then I had a good laugh at that. I was like, okay, like, so they're committed at least.
At that point, it had squandered any goodwill for me to enjoy how drawn out that scene was.
Yes.
Because I think I was still kind of annoyed at how much they tried to dine out on the William Howard Taft suit joke.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Getting, he's fucking like, fat. Jesus Christ.
It was like little kind of a sight gag that was like amusing. I wouldn't even say funny. Not a chuckle, but like, whatever. Amusing.
Yeah.
And then, like, they had like three callbacks to
it. Oh, they just kept going.
It's not very funny. Yeah, so much of
this. So much of this movie reminded me of every explainer article I've seen about the goddamn Beavis and Butthead sketch.
Yeah. Where it was
where it was like, okay,
I feel like I'm losing my mind.
Me too. And I'm like I saw the original sketch, and I was like, yeah. It's kind of a hack idea. Remember Beavis and Butthead, but the wig was funny. Like, I'll give it credit. And then, like, every day since, it's like, so-and-so explains breaking character in the fucking Beavis and Butthead sketch. And I'm like, guys, are you really going to fucking... Are you going to run a victory lap for a funny wig sketch? Get a grip of yourselves.
I still have not seen that sketch. I've only heard about that sketch. And so I actually don't even know the premise of that sketch. What's the premise?
The premise is the funniest part because it's a terrible premise. Mm-hmm. There is like a guy who's doing like an interview about generative AI played by Keenan. Yeah. And he keeps getting distracted because there's a guy in the background who looks like Beavis, who is Ryan Gosling in the Beavis costume, and that's the entire sketch.
Okay, it's that he's distracted by seeing Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A guy who looks like Beavis, and
do you know
that you look like Beavis, and you're like, Jesus Christ, someone wrote that in a
yeah. And the topper is that Butthead. You never seen the show Beavis and Butthead?
Yeah.
You never seen the show Beavis and Butthead? He looked just like Beavis.
Yeah, and then the topper is that Mikey Day comes in and he looks like Butthead, and you're like, okay, yeah.
I hate
it. You look like Beavis and Butthead. Good job. Yeah,
but apparently the story was that like the woman hadn't seen them in full makeup. So when she looked back, it was the first time she'd seen it. So then she starts laughing. And then, yeah, I mean, ever since Jimmy Fallon just completely ruined.
Oh, wait. Did this sketch. I'm sorry. I'm now getting this sketch blew up because people broke character.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I fucking hate this. I hate this so much. I hate this.
There's
so
like
much.
An entire media tour from like every person who's in the sketch.
And I feel like the most negative, like out of touch dad for being like, I still don't like it when they break character. I'm sorry. It's still not like, you know,
it's a dad take in the sense that people who remember Jimmy Fallon breaking character in every fucking sketch are probably like dad age. But I think he ruined it. Like, he ruined it for all of us because he just started doing it on purpose.
How insufferable would the cowbell sketch have been in Think Pieces had that come out in 2024?
Oh my God.
fucking kill me. I feel like, you know, like the media coverage on David S. Pumpkins almost killed that for me. But then I would like, I rewatched the sketch and I was like, no, this is funny. Like, it's a great premise. Like, the premise of that is sometimes there's a Halloween character that just wears a suit, has pumpkins on it. Like, that's funny to me.
Yeah, the name David S. Pumpkins is funny.
Yeah. And, the you know, what does he do? You know,
he's like, hey, I'm David Pumpkin, and he dances, and people like dancing. Yeah,
what are these guys? Part of it.
And it's Tom Hanks. People like Tom Hanks. I mean, like, there was a lot of talent in this movie. Like, the lady who played the widow of Steve Schwinn was funny. I think that's why, like, the funeral bit was briefly funny, was because she was committed and she did a good acting job, and her being incredulous as to how her husband exploded while trying to create the Pop-Tart, that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
It was so clearly something that should have been a sketch and a cartoon.
And there was like a vague whiff of like cultural critique about, like, you know, it seemed like he had just finished watching The Right Stuff or reading The Right Stuff when he wrote this. Cause it was, you know, there was a bunch of space guys with flat tops and Corvettes. And there was like the Mad Men bit in there.
Oh my God.
That's the part Chris Cabin was talking about that made it like something sinister instead was the Mad Men bit.
Go on. I haven't read this take, so I'm curious. What was it? What was the take?
It was just, oh God, I have to pull up Letterboxd. But it was basically like at an hour and 6 minutes, there's a 3 to 4 minute part that takes this movie from harmless to like something sent from hell or something like that. You know what I mean? Like just that reference. And like, I even had not seen that, I would have been like, okay, like, what's the joke here? Mad Men was a TV show? Like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah, literally the joke was Mad Men. It's crazy how they, like, drank whiskey and cheated on their wives, right?
The joke is, wouldn't it be funny if I could get John Slattery and John Hamm to come on and play their iconic TV characters because it's set in the same time period?
No, it's literally the Beavis and Butthead sketch. It's hey, remember exactly that thing.
Yeah, from a show that ended, like, a decade ago.
Yeah,
just evil in a way that we haven't seen since Hitler. I'm sorry. there was something about that moment where they had that, where, because you looked at John Hamm and you could see the years, you know, that, you know, and the years of, like, I mean, this guy was going to be huge. You know?
This is another thing people are fucking sold on, the idea that John Hamm is funny.
Yes.
And I have seen, other than 30 Rock, I have seen zero evidence for this. I thought he was funny in that, but mostly he's still good at playing an asshole.
Yes.
And that's fine. That's a good thing to be. Like, own it.
He was funny in the Wet Hot American Summer series as the Falcon or whatever his name was.
Oh, mm-hmm. See, I haven't seen that. Here's the thing about John Hamm. I think that John Hamm is, you know, probably very talented. He's great in Mad Men. There's something about him.
He's very talented, but he keeps trying to be like, oh, I'm also the funny guy. And I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah. I guess the issue I have with him is that, I feel like, I don't know, I feel bad for him because I feel like he's going to die. And so seeing him in this movie just felt like a fuck you to him almost.
Well, yeah, like,
yeah, it made me feel bad.
It made me feel bad.
If his whole thing is like, I want to be respected as a comedy actor, and he's come close to that, like, in other people's minds.
Sure.
Like, agreeing to come on and just redo his Mad Men character, it does feel like he's slumming it.
Especially since they didn't even let him be they didn't let him be Don Draper. Like, they wrote for Don Draper, which is such a fucking insult. Where I just, because it like, the character was not the character. It was this bad facsimile, this parody of it, but he's playing the parody. Just everything about it said, like, you know, fucking sing for your supper, bitch. And I just made me want to punch Jerry Seinfeld in the face.
It's like he and Bryan Cranston have the same agent or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but at least Bryan Cranston, I mean, I'm sorry.
Bryan Cranston has more range as an actor.
I mean, what range he has.
He was doing comedy successfully before Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking Bad was him proving his range because he was funny on Malcolm in the Middle before that.
Yes. And like, just like, I feel like Cranston, when I see him, even when he's doing the thing where he's popping up as fucking Walter White, I feel like he's only done it maybe a couple times, but he's definitely done it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like he just has a range that it's a treat. Whereas I don't know, I think
he has a personal likability where I feel like
it was the same thing with John Slattery though. I felt like even like John Slattery, I didn't feel bad for at all, even though he is you know arguably a much less successful actor than John Hamm. In terms of like, you know, the amount of roles I'm sure and the money that they get. I mean, John Slattery doesn't get John Hamm money to play these like bit parts and fucking weird Marvel shit, I'm sure.
I think part of it is that John Hamm seems like a guy who's talented, but also has a vibe like he's probably a dick in real life. Whereas those other guys seem like they're probably likable in real life. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, like John Slattery was like, all right, fuck it, I'll do it. Whereas John Hamm was like... And then he showed up and he's hungover and he's just pissed.
Not all funny people have to be likable either. Like, I still enjoy Chevy Chase because he was talented as fuck, even though he is, everyone knows he's a huge asshole. Like, it's fine.
I enjoy Seinfeld still, even though I know Jerry's a fucking asshole and, you know, might have dated a 17-year-old and he was 39 who was still in high school. But the thing is I'm like, you know.
Also, his wife is giving money to people, to Israelis
to forget,
who are beating up.
Yes, it's just like, hey, if there's one thing that the IDF needs, it's more money. Fucking insane. Ugh.
Did you notice that the end credits for this movie were 11 fucking minutes long, by the way?
Oh, I forgot. The fucking worst part of the movie is the end credit dance sequence.
That was very silly.
It was beyond silly. It was cruel. It was cruel to all those involved because, like, it was just watching people. It wasn't like the best version of that ever was There's Something About Mary. At the very end of that movie, they do that great dance sequence. And it's like watching that movie, you could tell people had fun making it, you know? Mm-hmm. Watching this movie did not look like it was fun to make. Like, the whole movie felt stressful. I didn't see anyone enjoying themselves. Maybe Jim Gaffigan. He was probably having the most fun of anyone there. The rest just felt like this was something they didn't want to fuck up. And so they're going to say the line that was written exactly as is.
Like there's someone just off camera leveling a gun at them.
Yeah, and it's Jerry fucking Seinfeld or some fucking Mossad agent he hired.
Black Cube.
Yes,
Black Cube.
Black Cube.
We had to bring in Black Cube to finish Unfrosted.
Yeah. And so like ending that movie with a fucking dance sequence, it's like in Arrested Development where there's an office party and Will Arnett's character goes, everybody dance now. And everyone looks at him and he goes, everybody dance now. Like it felt like your boss yelling at you to dance. Oh my God.
Well, I think that phenomenon forever was ruined by Tropic Thunder with Tom Cruise in the fucking Harvey Weinstein makeup, which was, I really love Tropic Thunder.
Oh, I love it.
The part that everybody talks about is, the worst part. Tom Cruise doing Harvey Weinstein, which was like not funny.
And somehow made me like sympathetic to Harvey Weinstein because I was like, damn, you kind of did an anti-Semitic caricature a little bit. I didn't even mind that. It was mostly that it was not funny, and it was clear that like he's very good actor at like he can put emotion to anything that he's reading.
Yes, he's earnest. He's like one of the most earnest actors we have, and that's like his superpower.
Yes, but like he can't ad lib. So in those scenes where he's yelling about all the shit that he's going to do, it's just kind of what was on paper. And
yeah, a hobo's dick cheese. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, and it's like stuff like that is you would a talented comic actor could have crushed it.
Yeah, Tom the people Cruise, on The Wire sell those lines that David Simon writes. Whereas like that was that felt like someone trying to sell a David Simon line and it not working.
Yes. But and then like the dance sequence that he has where you knowing Tom Cruise enough as a celebrity, you're like, he's not enjoying this. The whole fucking ending of Unfrosted was just it was
I gotta be honest, I didn't even watch the credit sequence.
Oh my god, I missed the fucking cherry on top.
I was checked way out by that point. I zoomed through it. Thank god this is over.
I sat through it.
This raises a question then. I have a question.
Yes.
What do you think is because the ending credits are not a joke. What do you think the worst joke in this whole movie was? Do you have one that stands out as the one that you were like, what the fuck?
Oh.
I think this could be my personal bugaboo, but like the first time the child actors were on screen, I was like, oh, these are kind of good for child actors.
Me too.
And whenever that happens, they're always like, oh, let's give them like 7 more lines. And the additional 7 more lines were like, all right, not cute anymore. Now I remember that these are child actors that probably have like weird stage parents, trying to get them more lines in this movie.
Yeah. I agreed. I was like, oh, they're pretty good. But then they overused them. I'm trying to think of, there's a scene with Amy Schumer and the assistant that ends. I can't think of the actual joke, but I just remember being almost impressed with like, oh, so we're cutting there, huh, fellas? You didn't get anything else out of that? It was just
for me, it was maybe like the third callback to Tony the Tiger, where it was like, all right, man, you guys completely ripped off an entire plot line of Paddington 2 and you got away with it, but now you keep having to go back to the well and it's become despicable in my mind. Because I love Hugh Grant. Like, I think he's hilarious.
And I love Christian Slater and the two of them. I like both of them. And like they're in a scene together and it sucks. Like the scene goes nowhere.
It is dog shit.
For me, it involves the child actors and it's the part where the kid gets his candy necklace stuck in the rump machine.
Oh,
that was because there's a there's a part where they cut to him catching one of the pieces of candy in his mouth. And I'm like, someone wrote this on paper and thought this was like a really funny fucking thing. And I was just, I think,
you know, that's true, because the amazing thing about shit like that, the amazing thing is how much stuff doesn't pay off and you realize that it was never supposed to pay off, which means that they are supposed to stand alone as a joke, which is like only a psychopath would think that's a joke. The joke is that he gets his candy necklace caught in the 1960s butt massager and all the candies fly off and it catches in his mouth. Yeah. I didn't know what the fuck was going on. And all I could, the people I was with were like, oh, so this is going to crush up that candy and that's going to be the idea for the frosting or something. Nothing. No,
yeah. No, it was just like it was an unfinished riff on weird 60s exercise machines is what
which is just thing was. But it is just so oh my god, it's psychopath shit.
Also, why the hell was it called Unfrosted? Because if you think about Pop Tarts, like I feel like you think about the frosted Pop Tarts,
right? Yeah.
But so it's not as if like them being unfrosted was somehow central to the movie.
No,
there's one joke where they say, should we put frosting on it? And they say, no, I feel like that's it. Yeah, like
that was my reaction too, where I'm like, okay, are you going to do anything else with that?
This movie is filled with that.
Also the whole thing with the milk lobby. Like I thought the payoff was going to be that like, yeah, obviously you need milk to eat with your Pop Tarts because Pop Tarts are fucking dry and taste like cardboard mixed with sugar. And if you try to eat it without milk, it's fucking awful. Uh-huh. And there was going to be, you know, a whole payoff with the milk lobby that's trying to stop them where they realize, oh no, like we can work together. Nope. None of that happened.
No, instead,
yeah, the milk lobby plot line just got completely abandoned.
Completely. Yep. Completely
Which,
abandoned.
Like, maybe for the best, because this movie definitely didn't need to be any fucking longer.
I agree, but at the same time, what ends up happening is that everything feels psycho. Everything feels made up, like on like the like jokes being thought out a little bit helps me at least understand that a human wrote them. It feels unhuman. Right. The way
it was sort of AI, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was. And I hate saying that because it's such a cliche at this point, like to even make that joke. But this was the most fucking AI makes a movie fucking ever. Yeah. And then like the big fucking for the adults, you know, payoff for this movie was a fucking January 6th joke.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was so fucking cringe.
Wait, what was that? I think I memory hold that part.
Dude, so the Tony the Tiger and all the mascots are protesting. Or they're on strike, yeah. And I don't even remember why. At this point, I was just like, I don't know what I was doing.
Because he learned that Pop-Tarts were going to be a thing, and then there wasn't going to be a mascot. Or no, it was the milk lobby was like, how come you're not getting a piece of the cereal business?
Oh, God.
Something like that,
I forget why. At some point in the movie, I just started texting my sponsor, just trying to be like, hey, I'm not going to relapse tonight, but in case I do. But like that January 6th joke was just, it was the closest to Jerry Seinfeld.
You're giving it a lot of credit by calling it a joke. I mean, it was just like, it was, hey, remember this?
Yes, it was, hey, remember January 6th? Remember the guy with the horns? And but like just watching that, it just everything about this was just like so mayonnaise. And it just, I don't know. I did not listen to the interview that he gave in which he said that cancel culture thing or like whatnot. And I still, in trying to like be fair, I'm like, was he really mad about it, or was he just asked about cancel culture and woke whatever on a fucking radio show and he answered? Like, is this part of the marketing strategy, or is it just the thing everyone would, of course, latch onto because people love to latch onto that kind of shit? Like,
but Seinfeld's kind of been on before like cancel culture became such a buzzword. I remember him talking about like, I'll never perform on a college campus.
A college
like
campus, yeah.
So you can see
there's a pattern.
Yeah.
He does have the thing where he just, and it's just so weird. It's so weird because he is the most vanilla. He is the most mayonnaise, no
a poster
fucking
boy.
Yes, and that's like always
he was,
been his
he was
thing.
Doing clean comedy in like the 80s.
Yes. And it's like the idea that he is mad about anything.
Yeah, like what joke does he have that he's gonna get canceled for?
Who's
you
gonna
know what
cancel
I mean?
You for anything? Yeah. It's almost like that he said the woke thing because he's just mad that they had to cast an Asian child in the beginning of this movie. Just like, I wanted it to be a pure white child.
There's even a joke in the movie where Gaffigan says something like, they don't like to be called bums anymore, they like to be called hobos. That felt like that. You know, that same vein that he's
the same weird
grievance.
Resentment. Yeah. You know, something that would have worked in a movie that I enjoyed, like, you know, in a movie that had some sort of like through line where I would have been like, oh, that's funny because, you know, oh, those words, they always change, you know.
Yeah. But this boomers love the joke where it's like, oh, he's not homeless. He's household challenged. Like they fucking.
They love that format.
That format is like the identify as an attack helicopter. Thing,
yes, exactly.
Yep.
Like, they cannot quit that joke.
They cannot quit being mad at political correctness. You know, since 1992. You know, like they've been on the same shit. But anyways, the movie fucking sucked, and I honestly. Like, I want to call the Hague, and I just feel like they're like it feels like criminal how much I hated this movie. It was a bad movie, guys. I didn't like it.
I didn't hate it that much. I thought a couple jokes worked, but I was just shocked at how long it felt.
Yeah, Well, you know, I Vince, we messaged you last night, you know, so there, I got an email from Matt about the show, and I was in the middle, I ended up with a late night making kimchi, and I get this message from Vince that's like, did you get that message? And I was like, holy fuck, I panic, because I thought that we were recording today or yesterday, and I was like, did I fuck the day up? So I got home, when I messaged you, I was on my way home, so I didn't get home till like 11:30. I had to be up at like 5:30 for school today. Mm-hmm. I actually watched the final 45 minutes during one of my classes. I was like, we're going to work on a paper today, guys, because I was so tired. And I finished the rest of the movie during class. But like, I don't feel like I lost it. I don't like stopping the movie and starting it again. But this was such a chore to get through last night that I was like 45 minutes in, and I'm like, I'm not fucking watching any more of this tonight. Like, I'm going to get some sleep, and I can do this during class tomorrow. So it you know, that speaks to how much I didn't care for it, even though like I'm kind of in Vince's boat. There's a couple, like, I'm not going to charge Seinfeld with war crimes over this. I'm not quite there. But it's a bad fucking movie, and like you have no reason to have to watch this movie unless you are a masochist.
Yeah. I fucking hated this movie, guys. I fucking hated it. I'm still mad.
I actually appreciate how much you hate it, Matt, because I had heard you guys talk about it and was like, well, I don't want to watch that. And then Vince is like, you have to. And I'm like, fuck. I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it. And Matt, you saying it's like the worst thing you've ever seen, I was like, prepared for that. And so,
oh, I helped you.
You helped me. It wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen. It was bad. It was a bad movie. Yeah. But it wasn't the worst movie I've ever seen. So that's my review.
I mean,
put that on the poster.
With you on that.
Yeah, put it on the poster. Not the worst movie Brendan has ever seen. Oh God, it was so fucking bad. And everyone involved in it should be shot. But I feel like the you know, yeah. Hey. I think we've said enough about this movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're good. Think
solid we B plus.
Yeah.
all right. Vince, Brendan, you want to take us out? Take us out of this bad boy.
Yeah. Eric, anything you want to plug?
Yeah. I have a podcast Vince has been on called Soundtracker, where I talk about movies with original motion picture soundtracks. Talk about the movie for a little bit, talk about the album, break down the songs that were on it. And we get into weird things. Like, it's not just like The Crow or Batman Forever. I mean, I've done those, but like, Dude, Where's My Car? Roadhouse. So, you know, it's not just the famous ones. I'm currently on a bit of a hiatus. I was saying before the show started, I'm starting back in June. I was not planning on taking this long off, but I got moved around from one subject to another at the high school. So it's kind of put me in a bind here, but you can find like 105 episodes, I think, for free over on Spotify, Apple. I have a Patreon for the show where I've got another like 40 episodes or something like that. But it's called Soundtracker. And, you know, if you want to check it out, check it out. And then I'm also on Twitter at Uwe Bollocks, UweBollocks. I don't use it as much. I still call it Twitter. I refuse to call it X. That's where you can find me.
All right. Well, that's another good one in the can. I hope you listeners appreciate what we went through for you.
Mm-hmm.
We will see you soon. Anything else, Vince, Matt?
No, I don't think so.
Frogcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns.
That's right. You can email me, frogcastbrendan@gmail.com. And until next week, good night and good chins.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.